Yeah, baby. What's up, baby? Welcome to Nervous Rex. Forgive the audio. I'm driving on the freeway. I have an amazing guest today named Cesar Torres. He was my acupuncturist for years. He did, taught me how to meditate. He gave me my mantra, transcendental meditation coach, a real guru, a real Yoda. He's a very sweet man. He's retired in Brazil. And I went to him in like 20 years ago. I went to him for acupuncture, and then he did so much more. He does a lot of body work, and he's just a spiritual, wise elder who taught me a lot. So I figured, hey, let's shoot the shit and see how he's handling this pandemic and everything. So it's a good talk. He's a very smart, wise man. He's like my Yoda. I love the guy. How you guys doing out there? Staying crispy? I got my first vaccine shot. Oh, but Bill Gates is microchipping you. I don't believe that. So I got my first one. I got my first vaccine, and I'm gonna get the second one so I can travel and the world can get back to normal. But normal was terrible. So what does that look like, baby? Oh, I really like today's guest because he's so wise and enlightened, but he would never tell you that. He just sort of leads by example. It's the opposite of sort of these new age spiritual narcissists who act like they have all the answers. I want to be surrounded by people asking questions, not giving answers. I want to be around people that are agnostic and say, I don't know, maybe it's this, and not just saying they know everything. I think that's a sign of intelligence. Like the Dunning-Kruger effect, that's where not very intelligent people think they know everything, and smart people say, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Fascinated with that. As well as apophenia is another one I like, meaning people that connect patterns that aren't there to find meaning and stuff because they simply can't say, I don't know, and not trust the science or the data or scientists or, you know, epidemiologists or whatever you want to call it. There's just a lot of doubt going on, and I get it, man, I get it. There's a lot of bullshit out there, but at the end of the day, when I get on an airplane, I trust that the pilot knows how to fly the plane, and I don't know more than him. He's, you know, it's like the world works because certain people do certain things. You know what I'm saying? I trust my dentist went to dental school. I don't go online and look up a YouTube video that has 800,000 hits of bad information about how to clean my own teeth. I trust the dentist. So come on, people. I'm pro-vax, pro-science, pro-choice. Yeah, that's what it is, baby. But hey, do what feels good, you know. Live and let live. Teach their own. But, you know, in this situation, it affects other people. So I just want everyone out there to get crispy so we could all get crispy together. I'm driving back to the desert on the 10 freeway. I just got to see my mom for the first time in 8 months because she's fully vaccinated now. And I can see my family again. So it's a good thing. I hope you guys are having a lovely day. This is going to be a fun talk. We already had the talk, so I'm just doing the intro afterwards. But this dude's the best. I just thought I like having these kind of people on the podcast that aren't necessarily famous, but they're the most interesting people. Because in life, I find the funniest, most interesting people are the ones that aren't trying to be famous. Yeah, there's some talented people out there who are obviously very funny, talented people, but the funniest fuckers, the ones, the real boys and the real girls, those are the fucking best. So that's what I like to have on the pod. I like to mix it up, baby. Oh, man, what else is going on? Yeah, that's it, you know. I booked another movie. I get to do a movie with Diane Keaton, one of my favorite actors of all time. Come on, baby. She's one of the best. She's an all-time legend. I think she's an Oscar-winning actress or nominated. Yeah, she won for Annie Hall. Maybe one of the most endearing scenes in the history of cinema was her playing tennis with Woody Allen. Insert joke here about his documentary and him being a pedophile. And the movie was incredible. Annie Hall, of course, maybe his best. So I get to do a movie with her. And I get to play, funny enough, a new age bullshit guru, a fucking spiritual narcissist. Ain't that a trip? Because I feel that's such a topic I'm so interested in, is the people who bypass and you know, just sort of use new age woo-woo stuff to not deal with their real shit. That's what I get to play in this movie. So I hope it goes well, because fuck, she's a fucking legend. So that's good. I'm just glad to be working. It's a tough time for work out there, especially in the entertainment industry. I don't know when Dirt Nasty Mickey Avalon shows are coming back. Though that'll be the last thing to come back. So that's what's going on this side of town, baby boy, baby girl. See, can I even say that anymore? Am I going to get in trouble because it's non-binary gender specifics? I'm just saying, like, even now, I guess YouTubers are getting in trouble saying, hey, guys. Like, well, there's girls out there too, but it's just like, guys just means people. Like, I would say to girls, what are you guys doing later? It's not being mean or taking away from anyone's specific gender capabilities. It's just manifesting the regalia. Anyway, let's not go down that road, shall we? Just want you guys to stay healthy and crispy. I vote for you to get vaccinated. But, you know, do what you want with your own body, baby. I got the Moderna. That's like the new thing. Hey, what shot you got, baby? What shot you got? I mean, I did grow a second head out of my neck. But other than that, it's fine. And I speak in full Chinese now at night. But it's working good. It's working good, baby. I think that hopefully the pandemic's winding down. But then you see the third wave in Europe and Brazil and say, oh, no, are we being too quick to dismiss the third wave? Who fucking knows? I don't know anything. I want to surround myself with people who say, I don't know. Maybe it's this, not I know it's this and that. Oh, baby. All right, I love you guys. Enjoy this talk. Oh, yeah, one more thing. Can you just go do this? This is a real quick favor to ask. Go on your phone right now to the fucking app, whatever app you're on, iTunes, whatever, and just go give me a little fucking quick review. Just say 5 stars. He's great. Because the more reviews I get, then the more I can get a sponsorship and all that yada, yada, yada. Because I need some sponsors, baby. They be coming and going. I need a regular sponsor. I need to pay the bills, pimp. Sorry, I had too much coffee. Love you guys. Enjoy the episode. Okay, welcome to Nervous Rex. Cesar Torres, my old friend who's now in Brazil. Yeah, how do you like Brazil?
Love Brazil.
Me too.
I'll tell you, Brazil is one of the most underrated places to go.
Isn't it a second world country? I've heard that somewhere. It's one of the only ones.
It's a second world country because, you know, there's no Home Depot, there's no Walmart, there's no, you know, superstores.
Right.
But the local stores all have, you know, everything you need. The supermarkets are first class.
Right.
I have to say.
Well, okay, so let me tell the listeners who you are. So, Cesar, I came to your practice. You had a acupuncture bodywork. What would you call it? Center on where was it? On Vermont?
Vermont, just north of Hollywood Boulevard.
Balance Acupuncture. A friend must have sent me to you maybe 20 years ago. I'm talking early 2000s, and I went in there. And I'd never had acupuncture before, and I was a little nervous, and you obviously did your magic on me, and then you did some really good body work where you would walk on my back, and you would do these certain things that I'll never forget, where you'd step on the back of my leg, and you'd have me raise my leg. I think it was the number 9, or no, it was 8. There was a mathematical formula.
18.
18? Why? 18,
yeah.
Why 18?
18 is a perfect number. Any of the multiples of 9.
Mm.
But I particularly like 18. It's something most people can handle. They can do 18 of whatever it is, push-ups or sit-ups or whatever. Mm. And if they want to do more, I say, okay, count to 18. And then if you want to do more, count another 9. Count another 9. Count another 9. So you're always in that perfect maximum of 9, because 9 is, in Chinese medicine, 9 is the most powerful number you can have.
And it's not just that. Nikola Tesla talked about 9 and 3, and he would always walk around a building 3 times before he'd go in, and then 3, 3, 3 is a pyramid. There's a lot of that could mm-hmm. be Egyptian. I think that's a worldwide thing. I mean, I know that, but it must have started in China.
It very well could have. I know Egypt also had some numerology. So I don't know if it's a something that all the cultures in some way must have dealt with,
right?
Must have had some knowledge of. Because any of the cultures that became advanced have that some form of basic, you know, I mean, look at the Masons. They started with basic geometry and basic numbers, and they built incredible things. So everywhere you look, you can find the very early stages of how they developed the thinking of numbers.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with that stuff because I guess that transcends all borders, and that's not just that. That's something that's a human thing, not just a country or a race. So you and I came to you probably for 10 years at least, and I'd say a few years into me going to you on a regular basis because you would just give me a tune-up, and I needed it, and I was living the Hollywood life, and I was, you know, probably not taking the best care of myself, kind of chasing the pleasures, and then you would keep me really balanced, and then years into me going to you for acupuncture, you gave me a mantra and taught me transcendental meditation.
Sorry,
let me turn that off. Jeez, I'm so sorry, Cesar. It's very rude. Very, very rude.
No problem.
All these bells dinging off. I set reminders for myself, and it's really annoying.
But life is like that. That's fine.
Yeah, you got to laugh at it.
Sometimes I look at things this way. If it happens, that's good.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, if it happens, it's good. Sometimes it needs a little interruption somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you taught me
that. To make you look in a different direction.
Yeah, you taught me that about meditating. You're like, if you're sitting there meditating and you hear some guy, you know, peeling out in his driveway, it's okay. It doesn't have to be quiet. You're not going to control that.
Yeah. The more you can accept in your life, the happier you will be.
Yeah, amor fati. Do you know what that is? Amor fati. That is the Stoic philosophy, and it means love your fate. Amor fati. Yeah. And if you could live by that code, that is very wise. There's a lot of parallel, similar things, just like we were talking about between the Chinese to the Egyptian to the Roman to the Greek. There's a lot of similar things in, you know, in Greek to Stoic to your Chinese philosophy to Egypt. There's a lot of parallels that seem to pop up, I've noticed, in kind of just my little readings here and there.
I love it because, you know, over the years, I've been now meditating more than 50 years, and without really trying to reach any particular goal or anything, you know, I started out in the beginning wanting to be enlightened and to, you know, to reach nirvana and that kind of thinking. But then I found that really, I just wanted to just be happy on a daily basis. And I think I've kind of achieved that goal, to just be happy every day.
And well, you seem happy. Every time I see you, you're smiling. I come into work, there would be some crazy stuff going on where, you know, I remember there'd be some chaos and you'd always kind of smile through it. And without you telling me that, you taught me that just by watching you kind of be very equanimous and smile in the face of maybe something going wrong in the office, or you always seem to smile through it all.
Yeah, I think that is the best approach. If you're going to look at a way of being in life, that's a good way to be. You know, just and I don't know if it's being positive, looking at the potential of something rather than the downfall of that thing, whatever it is. It's something that's being fed to you, you know, I feel. And, you know, like mother feeds you and sometimes you don't like the taste of it.
Right.
But you know somewhere that you got to eat it because it's good.
Right.
And then you grow up and then, oh, I do like broccoli.
Right. Or Brussels sprouts.
Why didn't like it so much? You know, why was that? So I've come to, I'm 78. I started when I was 27.
Wow.
Meditation, you know, and I was a young man with ambitions to be the best, at that time, the best director of television programs, the best, you know, I wanted to produce, direct, write, act.
That's why you ended up in L.A.
Yeah, well, no, not really. I went from that simply because one day I was in a meditation seminar and I was in New York City and I was never happy with the winters of New York City. Mm. I love New York City, but I had to live with, you know, I'm a tropical, born in Puerto Rico, I'm tropical minded.
Right.
My whole system is set up
right.
to be on a beach somewhere. Right. And then I saw, for the first time, I said, you know what? Why do I have to stay in New York? I could be anything, anywhere. And I just drew a line across where the temperate zones would be, where the climate would be best for me.
Uh-huh.
And I went there.
Then that's L.A.
That's L.A.
Right.
L.A. It was either L.A. It was either San Diego, L.A. or San Francisco.
Well, San Francisco, that's my hometown. It's freezing in San Francisco. You wouldn't want to go there. I grew up there. It's always cold and wet and gray. That's my hometown. I don't think you would have been too happy with that.
No, I wound up living in Los Angeles. You know, it was like my second home.
Right.
For more than 40, 45 years.
Yeah.
40 years.
Wow. Plus. And then so.
And I loved it.
Yeah, and you recently moved to Brazil a couple years ago, and then you you obviously made that move and retired. You went to Orlando for a few years, and then you went to Brazil, and you were born in Puerto Rico, but then how long were you in New York, and what made you want to get into this type of, meditation, all these things? How did that come about?
It was very interesting, and I'll tell you, I met someone at the TV station. I was working as an associate director for a Spanish TV station, like a Univision type of TV station. And one of the cameramen said to me, Cesar, you're getting so stressed. And you should try this meditation. And I said, well, where is it? He said, it's in the village. Greenwich Village. I said, I live right there. I'm living in Greenwich Village. And he said, well, it's. He gave me the name of the street and it's the address and everything. And I put it away in the back of my brain. One day, I went out for a walk. It was the most beautiful, sunny, fall type of day. You know, it was just not too cold, not too warm. I said, I got to be outside, just walk around. And I got to the corner and like a wind just turned my body. And I said, okay, the wind is going this way. I'm going. And I walked and I walked and then the wind turned me again. And I said, there's something going on here. And I said, okay. And then I walked and I walked and I didn't feel my body turn, but I felt my head turn. And I'm standing in front of the TM Center.
Transcendental Meditation.
Transcendental Meditation Center. And I said, oh, my friend, the cameraman, he told me about this place. So I walk in and I meet, I'll never forget, Jack Forum. Jack Forum was one of the early wise teachers of the movement. He was the first to write the book of Maharishi in the United States. So he captured the very first early sightings and the very first philosophy presentations of Maharishi before he was with the Beatles, mm-hmm. when he was going around just trying to spread the word. And he became a very faithful follower of Maharishi. And one day, I walked in and I said, I want to start meditating. He says, well, you know, you have the steps. You have to come for the first introductory lecture. And then there's a follow-up lecture. And I said, no, I'm ready to just start today. He says, no, he said, you can't do that. You have to go through, because Maharishi taught us these steps. I said, okay, when is the, I came for the first one, I came for the second one, and then I said, I'm ready. He says, okay, you're going to now come on a weekend day, a Saturday, you're going to learn, you come back on a Sunday. And I went through the steps, and I knew. I knew that was it. That was the perfect glove for my hand to go into. That was just it. And then I remembered something my grandmother. My grandmother was one of the wisest women I ever met in life. My grandmother. And people would come from all over in the town where we were in Puerto Rico to seek her advice. They would sit down with her in the living room. And I would be off in the distance just kind of saying, what is this person doing here? But she would be talking to them, and they would walk out very happy.
Wow.
And then I realized something. I said, this is something I need to do forever. And I went, after 2 years of meditation, I went to Belgium to learn to be a teacher of meditation. I was there for 3 months. And then after that course, 3 years later, I went for a governor's course. And then 6 months after that, I went for the what they had, the advanced techniques, where you got, Maharishi said, now you're going to get the whole shopping bag of everything I know. And I was in Switzerland for 6 months. And I can never say, I can never say that anything more that I've learned in this lifetime was added to that knowledge. The knowledge that I got from the masters of Ayurvedic, you know, in terms of the approach of life. And the meditation, the profound stillness that you learn to experience. And this is all it really comes down to. You know, there are many techniques that can get you to that stillness, but the objective is to feel the stillness, the complete, absolute stillness of existence.
Mm.
The most vibrant that you can be is at the most stillness that you can be.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's something that I as I'm getting older, I'm getting better at staying still and quiet and listening. And I'm really working on listening better, because I find my mind wanders a lot. I have ADHD, and I know everybody says they have ADHD, but I really have it, you know, as a child, I couldn't focus, and it was almost a learning disability. And I find I get distracted very easily. So your meditation helped me really kind of find that stillness. And I remember you telling me once, like, you're like, have you been meditating in the morning and in the evening? And I would say, I've been kind of lazy. And you'd say, it's in your back pocket for the rest of your life. You got it forever. Don't worry. It's there when you want
exactly.
it.
So
I've always revisited
exactly.
it. When I've needed to, I've gone back to it. Like, you know, I need to find a little bit of stillness. Everything's crazy. But what I've noticed in living in Joshua Tree is that my environment is so quiet and still that it makes me less restless. And when I go back into the city, I find I get a little more crazy because yes. I'm sensitive and I react to my yes. environment. So I agree with you. I think stillness is the key. There was a book I just read about this. You're absolutely right. However you got to get there, I think that's when certain things come up. Inspiration, ideas, clarity. We're too overstimulated.
Well, I'll tell you the most recent experience that I've come to understand is that we're in a body that is completely moving all the time, even when we don't realize it. You know, the autonomic system of us just is functioning all the time. We don't think to swallow. We don't think to breathe. We don't think, we don't activate anything. It just happens. And we feel like our body is totally still, even when it's not. The cells of everything, every element in life, wood, metal, earth, stone, whatever you look at, any element you look at that looks still is actually very much alive and moving. And when I realized that, I said, oh, I am on a planet that appears to be still, but is moving. This planet is moving. When I can feel that the stillness of this planet is moving, then I know that we are not only this planet, but the whole solar system, the whole galaxy is forever moving. It is never still. So the reality of stillness is motion. And the reality of motion is stillness. I know it's a hard concept to wrap your mind around because we're always thinking of, oh, it's either still or it's moving. It's either black or it's white, or it's either relative or absolute. It's either heaven or hell. We divide things as a rule. But I think the ultimate reality is that existence and life itself, the nature of life itself, which I call existence, the nature is that there is no duality. There is no distinction between stillness and motion. We experience it that way. But in the higher, I would say, consciousness allows us to understand that there is no duality. There is no separateness. The yin and the yang is one. It's not two.
So I feel that also that could be applied to acting or stand-up comedy. Like the best actors are very still and they just bring you in without doing a lot. Or the best comedians, if they're funny, they don't have to overdo it and they could just stand there still and deliver a funny joke. And that sucks me in more than someone who's doing a lot. So it's attractive.
I see that life itself is more funny than not.
That's a good
way. I see that nature itself is really hilarious.
I couldn't agree more. I learned that lesson. One time I was in LA and some lady was road raging and getting upset. And she pulls up next to me and she screeches and looks at me and she's all upset. And I just looked at her and I laughed. Instead of meeting her at the angry level, instead of getting mad back at her and escalating it, I just looked at her and I laughed. And then she realized how crazy she was being. And then she laughed and then drove away. And I said, that's it.
That's it.
That's the key.
Yeah.
And I've always been able, I think you got to be able to laugh at yourself too. You know, when people take themselves too seriously, I just say, you know what? You got to laugh at yourself, at life. You got to laugh at everything. If you're in traffic, it's funny. And I think a lot of people, and you probably have seen this in the new age wellness community, at least in Los Angeles and San Francisco that I've seen, they take themselves a little too seriously. Like you were saying earlier about people who over meditate or they wear it like a badge, like I'm holier than thou.
Yeah.
I know a lot of that.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of it, but you know, I have to say, knowing you over the years, you look in the mirror every day, so you don't see the change that I see.
Right.
I see that you have matured a lot.
Is it the facial hair?
No. It's your person. Your person. I tend to look at people and look into their being, the person, rather than what they're wearing or how they're comb their hair or mustache or beard or whatever.
Right.
You know, I tend to just see the person. It's a habit I have.
Good habit.
And I think I learned it I don't think I learned it, but I put it into practice whenever a patient would come in for the first time through my door. You know, I would just see the person, and within the first two or three steps, I had a somewhat of a picture, an impression of what this person is going through. It's part of the diagnosis.
Well, yeah, and you're doing energy work with the person and taking on my neurotic energy as I come in from a stressful LA day and come in, and then you are, you know, physically working on my body and doing really deep work that was, you know, honestly, you're a very good healer. I mean, you did some magic stuff, and I would go to other acupuncturists and body work when I travel, and I would just say, oh, I need to get back to Cesar. And yeah, you were very good at it. So you don't practice anymore. Now you're retired. So do you do any work maybe on anyone out there, right?
No. And, the only person that I've actually worked on here is my wife.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's cool. She still gets to do it.
Yeah. When we first met, she had issues sleeping. And now she sleeps a lot better.
I'll bet.
And yeah, she doesn't meditate, but she has somehow become calmer.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's my influence or our influence together. Maybe it's just that, you know, my routine is I wake up early and I go to bed early. Her routine was, get up very late and go to sleep like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Yeah, you taught me that too. You want to go down when the sun goes down and up when the sun goes up to live healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a flower.
And I do a lot of the feng shui as well. So I aim the head of my bed towards north or northeast, if possible.
Oh, good. My bed is north. The head of my bed is north-ish, close enough. I can't put my bed at a weird angle. No, so what does that do?
That's fine. That's all you need.
What does that do?
That's all you need, because there's a magnetic pull. Magnetic pull of the whole planet, the whole Earth. So if your head is in line, it's like you're swimming with the river rather than against it.
Right.
So while you're sleeping, you're still having the energy move up the spine to the brain. You know, there are two things about that. In Chinese medicine, you know, there's the whole universal orbit where energy goes up the spine and down. So there's a whole circle that goes up and down from the North Pole to the South Pole, so to speak, which energy goes up through the feet from the earth. And it's actually easier to bring energy up to your brain than it is to bring energy from your brain down to your feet.
I've had a doctor I went to once when I told him I was getting acupuncture, and he kind of scoffed at it because he was so stuck in his Western way of thinking that I believe he said, because they can't see the energy meridians that flow through the body, it doesn't exist. And that's a very Western way of thinking. And I was like, no, I go, it's real. It works. It heals you. There's energy flowing through us. And I think sort of in the West, these medical doctors get too stuck on the physical without the energy and things that go through your body, right?
Well, you know, I would walk into doctor's offices and face that in Western medicine quite a bit. And I would say, okay, you have the light. Your light bulb is up here on the ceiling. Where is your switch to turn it on and off? I said, if you walked into a room for the first time and you didn't find that switch, you would need someone to show you where that switch is. Well, acupuncturists learn where the switches are to turn energy on at different parts of the body from different parts of the body. The same way a room is designed. In fact, if you walked into a warehouse with a bank of lights, you might have several switches. And you have to know where those switches are, or else you're going to be working in that warehouse in the dark.
I like that.
So they would come to kind of begin to understand it. I said, this is the way we look at acupuncture.
I like that. Because I believe in it. And yeah, there's some people who just because they can't see it, they don't believe it. I remember once you said something about global warming. You said to me, we were FaceTiming. I think you had just moved to, you were maybe in Orlando. We were FaceTiming and catching up. And you said global warming is a good thing. What did you mean by that? Just because, is it the Taoist way of like, you know, I recently read the Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, and in it he says, you know, I forget which chapter it was. He's like, do you really think you can change the world? I think not. You need to let, you know, something along those lines, like you let the planet do its thing. You're not in control, you know, something along those lines.
Well, you know, I think of it this way. The two people sitting at the edge of the island and they see a hurricane coming towards the island. And one starts praying, please God, don't let this hurricane come to us. And the other one says, who do you think is sending the hurricane? It's the same force, same energy. Mm. Now, why is it necessary? The earth is, you know, think of it. If the earth has a cold and it has to sneeze, you don't say, don't sneeze, please.
Right.
It has to do its thing. So I believe we were covered in ice at one polar and another, and the planet is sort of spinning on an axis. And I think maybe, I don't know if it's time, but it's necessary for things to shift.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's correcting or if it's just time for it to do a different sort of spin. And whatever changes have to come about will come about.
So does that mean we don't have to stop pumping the atmosphere full of, you know, toxic fumes? Do we take any course to alter what we 8 billion people are doing? Or
Yes. I totally agree. We have to do the right thing. Just like the planet is doing the thing it must do, we have to do the thing we're supposed to do rather than doing the thing we were not supposed to do for a long time. It's like, you know, you have to kind of look at it as, do I think I can fly and jump off this, you know, this balcony 8 stories down and land safely or not? Some people think they can and they don't. They don't land so safely. So you have to use your common sense. And I think also what's happening is, and I do see it, I think I mentioned this to you. When you look at videos of cats and dogs on the internet now, they're friends. A long time ago, if a cat and a dog looked at each other, they would hiss and bark and be at odds.
Right.
But that's not happening. And I believe that there's a consciousness level that has risen. A consciousness level that has risen across the whole planet, that we are now at a different stage of consciousness in the human development and in planet development. And I believe that part of this global warming is part of that consciousness rising of the planet.
Yeah, it's a wake-up call, I think, is happening. Meanwhile, while there's a lot of dark forces, there's a lot of light happening as well. This episode of Nervous Rex is brought to you by Shaman Ramen. Oh, baby, am I excited about this one. Two of my friends created the first adaptogenic superfood ramen, and boy, is it delicious. If you live in the Southern California area, you can go ahead and get it at Erewhon, but pretty soon it's going to be available all over. Look, it's an immune booster. It has 7 adaptogenic mushrooms. It's got anti-inflammatory ingredients, vitamins A and C, non-fortified nutritional yeast, soy-free, miso, 100% organic and plant-based. But the best part about it is it's sexy. And girls and guys love it when you're sexy because you're looking good and you're feeling good and you're slurping on some delicious, nutritious love. I'm telling you, there's lion's mane in it. There's cordyceps, reishi mushrooms. Is it reishi or reishi? Either way, there's a whole bunch of mushrooms, some that I can't even pronounce. But basically, long story short, it's the world's first adaptogenic superfood ramen. Conscience, convenience in a cup. And right now, let's be honest, we're all sitting around. We got nowhere to go. We're in a pandemic, so what better time to sit around and get healthy and just spend as little time as possible cooking? It's a win-win because I'm lazy. I just want to eat healthy and I don't have time to be messing around. So for all you guys out there, please, you must go to shamanfoods.life and check out this product. It is so good. Or you could go to Shaman Ramen on Instagram and check out the regalia. Guys, I'm telling you right now, this is a delicious treat. I back it. I just had one, and it's slurpy delicious treat. I love you guys.
How do you feel about the pandemic? And you know, there's obviously, you're not in America right now, but there's a lot of resistance, even in the wellness community, to the science and the facts of that this is real, because maybe they can't see it. I think a lot of people, there's a lot of problematic things in this country with people accepting the science and the reality of a global pandemic, and they want to politicize it or create a fairy tale, because we have a lot of magical thinkers in this country who maybe aren't as grounded in reality. But there's, you know, there's that contrast between spirituality and science, right? So what's your take on it?
I say to these people, because I already had my first vaccine.
Oh, good.
I'm in Brazil, and here it's a little bit more liberal in getting the vaccine. I went to a local clinic. They're going by ages, and fortunately, I'm up in that advanced area, so that I was one of the earlier vaccines. And I look at it this way. If someone has an allergy, seasonal allergy, they have no problem getting some local allergy tablet and taking it. But if you didn't take that allergy, your throat might swell up and you could die.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're willing to take a tablet for an allergy, you should be able to take a vaccine for something a lot stronger that could kill you.
Well, yeah, I think people don't understand the irony. They'll be anti-vaxxers, but they'll be smoking cigarettes, eating McDonald's, and, you know, drinking poisonous alcohol. But don't put that in me, right?
Yeah, no, I think also the consciousness has allowed for this kind of vaccine to exist now. I think this is maybe the third major. I heard this the other day on one of the commentaries on television, that first the nuclear energy, the atom bomb, was a breakthrough in nuclear energy. And then Einstein released the theory of relativity, which allowed for so many uses that came out of that, the computers and even to the cell phone. Everything was applied to that knowledge. And now the technology of being able to extract the code of the virus and then inject the anti-code of that virus to the system, the human system, so that that code cannot affect you, and that now can be applied. If they continue the same research and they apply to diabetes, to sickle cell anemia, to cancer, they can detect the code of whatever it is that is attacking the human race, the human planet, and combat it. You know, if the forest is on fire, you combat that fire to control it from burning up the rest of the forest. humanity is in the same kind of situation. We have something that is going to spread unless we stop it. And for the sake of the human race and the sake of the planet, we have to. The consciousness has to rise to meet the challenge. The other thing is, though, on the other side of that, have no fear that the continuance of this existence will never end. The same drop of water that existed on this planet in the beginning of its existence is still here. No water has been lost. Not one molecule of this existence that we're in is missing. It does become something else. When we die, all our molecules and everything sort of rearrange into something other.
What do you think happens after we die?
Not much. Not much. However, consciousness becomes a lot freer. You know, the analogy I made once before to you, take a bunch of colored bottles, glass bottles, put ocean water in each bottle and cap it. And they're all different colors, like all the human race. And throw all the bottles into the ocean until they hit the most profound level of the ocean. Somewhere along the way, we have to realize that the ocean water outside us is the same as the ocean water inside us. I call that the consciousness. Now, what happens when the glass breaks and the water inside the bottle becomes the water outside the bottle? Not much.
Right.
We become privy to a much larger consciousness. Now, that's a consciousness that we cannot attain while we're in the bottle. No one can. So when someone says they are fully enlightened, if they're still inside that bottle, they are not the ocean. Right. They are still not the ocean. And consider that the ocean, from where I stand, is not just the ocean, but it's the consciousness that permeates more than the galaxy. That's why when someone says, "Do you believe in God?" I say, "Yes. Yes." There is the fact that there is this existence is proof enough that there is no non-existence.
Right.
There is nothing that is not existent.
I like that. That's a good way to look at it. I have a lot of problems with organized religion and blind faith. But deep inside, there has to be some source of creation or something. It can't just come out of a vacuum, right? But I feel like we've just been pounded with such bullshit with people that use it for the wrong agenda, to make money, to sex cults, to abusive, you know, there's so many shucksters and evil people that take the name of God or push their agenda on you, or, you know, hey, you know, open, you know, once a church has a library in it, I'm running the other way, or they're, you know, past the basket. I feel like it's a hustle that people use it wrong. So it's turned me off. Organized religion, that is. Right?
Yes.
I like the transcendentalist movement, transcendental meditation. Funny, didn't put that together. That, you know, Thoreau and Emerson talk about, you go into nature and you find your connection to God through yourself, and we all have it. It's not an organized thing. You have that already. Just go out into nature and find it. I like that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I read Wordsworth. Wordsworth is like you. You're great out in nature. He loved to be out in nature. And then look at Coleridge. Coleridge got high. Kublai Khan.
Who's Coleridge?
Coleridge was a poet. He wrote If you have a chance, read Kubla Khan.
I'll put it in my notes.
Yeah, Kubla Khan is a poem written by someone who is a poet, a great poet, who is totally high.
On what?
I think at those times it might have been cocaine. Yeah.
So where is he from? But where's this person from?
British.
Yeah. Yeah, those white
British poets.
Like coke.
And a guy told me who, this was a good friend of mine, for about 3 or 4 years. He just came into my life. We worked together, then he disappeared. But he was in rehabilitation for doing drugs. And he said one thing that he totally realized, that the goal he wanted in life was perfectly fine, was good. It was just the technique he was using to get it. He realized that to be truly, truly happy, he could not continue doing drugs. But he said, a lot of people think, oh, when they're doing drugs and getting high to make themselves feel good and happy, that they're guilty of doing that.
Right. They're chasing pleasure.
Yeah. They think they're chasing pleasure, like, you know, that something is, they're guilty of doing that. No,
I've been guilty of doing that. And that brings up an interesting point. I mean, I think there's, you know, you could say drugs or food. There's good food and there's bad food. I believe there are some high vibration psychedelic experiences that you can have. But like Alan Watts says, once you get the message, hang up the phone and you don't abuse it. You could maybe have an experience. You know, they're using psilocybin and MDMA for people who are in the last stages of their life with terminal cancer, and it's helping them. And there's, you know, there's some stuff I think that could be helpful, but it's about abusing it. And then also, you know, when like my mom will call me sometimes and be like, are you happy? And I say, Mom, happiness is an emotion that comes and goes. If I was just happy all the time, I would be insane. I'm happy as a byproduct of things that I do. I'm not trying to be happy. I'm happy when it happens to me.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't try to be happy. If you're trying, you're not happy.
You can't try anything. It's like Bukowski left two words on his grave. Don't try. Charles Bukowski left two words on his grave. Don't try. And I didn't understand what that meant at first. And then the older I get, I'm like, oh, I know what he means. You don't try. You let it come to you, whether it's
just let it be,
or money or work. Like, you, surrender is powerful. And it's that's a weird one that I've learned. The less you try, the more it comes to you.
It's like that bird in your hand. If you try to hold it, it flies away. Just let it. I had that experience in Idlewild. I was up on a weekend in Idlewild in the mountains.
I live near there. I've never been. I want to go see that place.
And I heard the bird chirping up in the tree. So I just stood still. I put my arm out and my palm out. And I think it had thought that I was giving it some food. I had no food in my palm. But it came down, landed in my palm, and looked at me. I looked at it and stayed for a while and then flew away back up into the tree. And it's just, you know, let it be. Let it be. Don't try.
Yeah, let life happen.
Let life happen.
Yeah, when people try, and I've been guilty of this as well, like when you try to force things too much, and that could be said for, you know, I see it happen around me when people try too hard. It's a turnoff. It turns people off. Well, again, whether it's an actor or a comedian on stage or interacting in life and somebody's trying to impress you too much, it's like just...
Mm-hmm.
And I've been that guy. I look back and I've been that person who was trying too hard to be liked or be accepted. And then it just turns people off. But I think everyone finds that themselves.
Yeah, I think I think people can be themselves when you are yourself. And that's a better relationship between people.
You know, I noticed I tend to mirror people's personalities, and I surround myself with different friends who have characteristics that I have. And when I hang out with my comedian friends, I'm funnier. When I hang out with someone like you, I like to have these conversations. When I hang out with, so it's almost like certain friends bring out a shade of me, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what I think on that subject. I'm not sure if it's reincarnation. I don't want to call it that. But I believe that I've been so many versions of me on this planet that I see other versions of other people. And I somehow get this feeling like, oh, this person was a brother of mine in a past life or something. Or this energy that's being presented here by this person to me, I recognize this energy. And it was an energy that I had. So I relate to it. Our energies relate. So if it's, you feel like you're funnier because this person is there, because, yeah, that energy existed before, and it's just like you kind of feel it again. I see people around me, and I always say, oh, I'm sure there was something that transpired our energies before that happened. Otherwise, they would not be here. This is not a coincidence that this person is here today, now. It's like back to that drop of water. It circulates. It goes up in the clouds. It comes down. I don't know if you want to call that reincarnation of water. It's just a system. Mm. And I feel like our lives are part of that system. And everyone who comes in and out, somehow we were there. We've done it. And it may be new, but it may also be old.
Yeah. I have one of the big questions that always crosses my mind is
life chaos? This is just how I don't consciously think that, you know. I don't go around thinking, oh, this person is, oh, I remember this person. No, I just kind of feel that. Like an energy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Do you think that life is random, or is there a design?
There's a design, definitely a design. Nature has a definite design. Everything is growing. Grass grows, trees grow, and you cannot stop that growth. You cut the grass will grow again. You stop a life, that life will go again. There's a design. A tree reaches 100 years, 200 years, whatever its lifetime is, and it falls. But there's another tree that comes up. So that you don't end trees, but they're growing. And I believe that consciousness has a direction. Consciousness. I do believe, I've seen it in my lifetime. I've seen changes in attitudes, in social consciousness, in worldly consciousness, in, I don't know, in the human existence of even bugs. You know, I'm not sure how I can explain it, but things that I just observe in life.
Do you think that means we're going somewhere else as a species, out of our bodies into the next thing, which is some type of consciousness that's beyond the physical? Where is it going?
I don't think we need the physical. I think we'll always have a physical, but the consciousness will not be outside the physical. Everyone will have a stronger unity between the consciousness and the physical. The physical will grow just as much as the consciousness. You never want to separate the two. You never want to divide the two. You want to unify and strengthen both. The physical must keep up with the consciousness. That's why some people have a hard time. Their body shakes because they just cannot contain the consciousness. I see some of that in you. I know you're shaking your head because consciousness.
Yeah.
Your consciousness is a little bit ahead of your physical.
Mm.
So that's why you feel a little bit uncomfortable with your physical.
Yeah.
But I see that you're balancing out better.
I think it's the desert. I think it's where I live has forced me to slow down. And, I just learned my name Simon means to listen. I've been talking for 40 years and not shut up. It's time to start listening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. See?
That's what my name means. So
that's the consciousness. You cannot attain that kind of consciousness without the body becoming still. When you're growing and you feel that you're growing and you know that you're growing, it's because your body has allowed you to. You never get a nervous system that can't handle being inside you.
What's interesting that it's as my body at age 46 is starting to go over the hill, right? At my age, midlife, I'm starting to notice the body, it's not as easy to do 20 push-ups or it's not as easy to get out of, I'm starting to notice these things.
Yeah.
But simultaneously, I feel I'm starting to become a little more, without sounding obnoxious, but a little more wise in the way I
think. Yes. And that's, until you're about 18, there's certain parts of the brain that are not developed in terms of what is a risk factor.
Right.
A lot of young men and young women want to join the army and fight and shoot a gun and take risk with their life because that part of the brain's not developed.
Right.
Now, when the fullness of your brain is developed and consciousness starts to expand within your brain, you begin to be a lot wiser and a lot more cautious with what you do and you don't do because you realize the treasure of existence. The life energy is not bounded by I'm trying to think of the right word. It's not bounded by anything is the right word. Consciousness is not bounded by anything. And as long as you maintain a healthy consciousness, you begin to see a lot more, understand a lot more. And the more you understand, I believe, the happier you get, the easier you live, the more enjoyment you feel. So it's to our advantage to just continue expanding consciousness. And I'll tell you, one of the beautiful things about transcendental meditation is that it allows for mental potential to expand. When you transcend, you are actually experiencing newer areas of your brain, of your consciousness.
Yeah, I told you sometimes when I'm meditating, I'll feel, and I looked it up, it's a common thing, I'll feel this pressure on the back of my eyeballs. Uh-huh. It's weird, kind of like, I don't know what this is, the strangest feeling. I'll sit there, maybe, you know, like you said, you're like, don't even focus on your breath. Don't even worry about your breath. You're going to breathe. Just say the word that you gave me, which I won't say, which I remember when you gave me my mantra. I remember saying to you before, I'm like, what if I forget the word? You laughed and said, you won't. And then you said it. And I'll never forget it. And it's a Chinese sound. I would never remember a word like this, but I remember.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I start to get into the really the flow of it, I just feel the back of my eyeballs like a surge.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Does that, have you ever experienced it? What is that?
Oh, many times. Many. It's very common to feel that when you've been meditating, you begin to experience where you gather stress. And for people like you and I, both, I include myself, I'm a very visual person. I see things with my eyes more than with my ears or with my nose or with my mouth. I see detail. I see encompassing. I see the wide and the narrow, the zoom. I focus. My eyes is always constantly working. Then when I meditate, I see, oh, look at the amount of pressure behind my eyes. And then little by little, sometimes it takes me 30 to 40 minutes, the pressure behind my eyes is gone. And it's much easier to see, actually.
Wow.
It's like refreshing.
Hmm.
But it's sometimes, it's not always, but sometimes the pressure still continues after the meditation. And I realize that just I've been overworking my eyes.
Yeah, especially now looking at these screens can't be too good. You know, I try to not look at a computer monitor or my phone too late at night as it'll throw off the circadian rhythms. You know, your body doesn't know you're looking at a screen. It thinks it's looking at a sun at 11 p.m. You know, it's probably not a good idea.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and the perfect sleep time to hit the bed is between 11 and 1.
11 p.m. and 1 a.m.?
Yeah. Between there,
right,
the moon is at its height.
Mm.
During the day, the sun is at its height, 11 to 1.
Right.
So whenever the sun is at its height, your energy level is being pulled up by the sun energy.
So you're at one with the stars and the planets and the moon, and you're connected more.
Yeah. The moon provides serenity. The moon provides the cool, the water, to the fire of the sun. So if you can be in bed by, let's say, 10, 10:30, 11, you're asleep, you're maximizing serenity in your body.
Mm.
You're asleep between 11 and 1, you're maximizing stillness. And if you're active between 11 and 1 in the daytime, you're maximizing activity.
Yeah, I feel that lately I've been sleeping better since for the first year, like, you know, this pandemic, and there's been chaos and things are just very strange right now, that it was hard for me to sleep for a while. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd be like, what's happening? What is this? You know, the people are confused and lost, and what's real and what isn't. Losing friends over political and conspiratorial thinking and anti-Semitic rhetoric with these crazy things that are, you know, it's bringing up a real ugly side of the country that's scary as a Jewish person who has downloaded in my DNA running away from the Nazis not too long ago.
Right.
And you see this sort of rise in white supremacy and this racism. And it's been stressful, and I feel fatigued and I feel exhausted mentally. So the first time in a very long time, I'm starting to get my sleep, and I just feel so much better just getting my normal rest.
But something I have to add here, because I find this happens to me occasionally. I sleep pretty normally. Once I hit the bed, I go to sleep, I'm done. I wake up like 5:30, 6 o'clock next morning. But occasionally I wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning and I don't know, the thought came to me, okay, God, what is it you want to say? You got my full attention. I'm listening. I'm listening. And if you've got something to say, put it in my brain and I'll get it and then I'll go back to sleep. But if I find I'm tossing and turning, it's like I'm refusing to listen to something that's got to be said to me.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that. I'm going to use that next time because sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm just going to start to listen better.
You say, okay, I'm listening. You got my full attention. And then see what thought comes.
Similar to what happens in meditation. Sometimes something will download because you're just still and listening, right?
Yes, yes. And sometimes it's just something important that you maybe have forgotten and then you get reminded. I believe very much in guardian angels. Not just one guardian angel, but I do believe that there are, I don't know if they're selected beings who have been here and have the experience of being kind of assigned to be close to us and guide us, and we have to listen to them. And they're not, they don't make their presence felt always. You know, it's like when I told you I was in the village and I turned this way, turned that way, and I was in front of, I felt there was something guiding me there.
Mm-hmm.
And it may have been in the form of the wind, but there was definitely something guiding me to the front of that door. You know, and to this day, I thank God. I thank whatever guardian angel, whatever energy it was that moved me there, because it really has been one of the greatest experiences that continues to be in my life.
Well, I'm glad you got blown that way, because now I'm connected through you and you've given me some of the tools that you've learned.
Full circle. Yeah, love it.
Full circle. Love it. Now, I know you don't like to tell people how to live. We talked the other day on a FaceTime and caught up, and I said, would you do the podcast? And you said, I don't want to tell anyone how to live or what to do. If there is any pearls of wisdom that's sort of an overall summary of maybe to end this pod and this interview of what people can do, what's some advice you would give to a listener who might be looking for something?
I've summed it up in these. I remember I made a t-shirt once.
Yeah, I remember.
Love everything always. I mean, it sounds a little corny and it's not easy to do. And you don't have to stick to that like a religion, but I like it. I like living that way. Love everything always.
It's like amor fati. Yeah, it's similar to amor fati. Love your fate. Whatever. If you get stuck in traffic, don't get upset. This is some good time to make a phone call and listen to a podcast. How about that?
Yeah. You know, I had this one experience a long time ago where I was in the car, the light turned green for me to go. I didn't turn left. I didn't look left or right. I just saw the green light. I didn't feel like going. I didn't feel like putting my foot on the gas and going. I just paused. And no one honked me from behind. There was nobody behind me. And some guy comes through the red light, full speed.
Wow.
And crashes into the corner.
Wow.
And I realized I saw the green light. I could have put the pedal down and I would have been smack in the middle of that crash. So taking that pause, whenever you feel like that's the right thing to do, it's the right thing to do.
That was a deep instinctual gut feeling you had that saved your life, possibly.
Right. And, you know, there was no sound, the warning or any kind like that. Just happened like a flash.
Hmm.
So, but anyway.
Well, I'm glad you paused. And thank you, Cesar, for taking the time to talk with me and share some of this stuff with my listeners. And I'm happy to call you a friend. And let's do it. Next time we do this, we don't have to hit record. We'll just do a catch up and
definitely
soon. Yeah, thank you.
I love talking to you, especially when we talk about this sort of, you know, stuff that I can speak in a more profound way. I love it. I can't speak like that to everybody.
Right. No.
I spend most of my time just saying, hi, how's breakfast? How's lunch? How's dinner?
Well, good. Anytime you want to talk about this stuff, I'm all ears. For the first time in my life, I'm all ears.
Fantastic. Love it. Be well.
Thank you, Cesar. Love
you. Take good care. Love you. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that talk with Cesar. What a great dude. I hope to be as equanimous and enlightened as him one day. He's just a great dude. So I hope you guys like that little chat. And I hope you guys keep it crispy out there, you know. Stay crispy. Don't be a salty little bandicoot, you know. Love your neighbor. I don't care what political, you race, whatever you are. We all just got to be crispy together, you know. We just got to crunch down. I just want to get back to fucking the horrible normal that was life before the Demi. You know what I'm saying? I want to get back to that shit. People are rusty too. I'm rusty in interacting with the world. It's weird. I feel like everything's just weird, keeps getting weirder. Hey, but what are you going to do, man? Can't fight it. You just got to go with the flow, baby. All right. Here's a song that I just found that's a feel-good song to lighten up your day. I feel bam, 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 bam. Enjoy. I love you guys.
Looking to the sky, saw the sun, am I kidding now? I feel bad, I feel sad, I feel great, I feel fine, I feel great. I'll go back to bed. That I'm not okay. It's the way that things are passing, but I can't remember the day when my heart was broken down in parts. I feel great. Once again, I will dance, but in a way I feel apart. The other day I lost control. I want your love after dark. Walk by my side hand in hand. I want your soul, your soul.